Mr. Chairman, fellow delegates, fellow Democrats and guests of the convention, I have presumed to ask this special favor that I could appear here for but a moment. My heart is full, and I am deeply grateful. But I did not come here tonight to speak of the action that you have just taken. That I shall do tomorrow night, after you have chosen a vice president. Now, it is in connection with that choice that I have taken this unusual step of asking to be heard briefly tonight. The American people have the solemn obligation to consider with the utmost care who will be their president if the elected president is prevented by a higher will from serving his full term. It is a sober reminder that 7 out of 34 presidents have served as the result of such an indirect selection. The responsibility of the presidency has grown so great that the nation's attention has become focused as never before on the office of the vice presidency. The choice for that office has become almost as important as the choice for the presidency. Each political party has therefore the solemn obligation to offer the country as its choice for the vice presidency a person fully equipped first to assist in the discharge of the duties of the most exacting job in the world, and second, to himself assume, if need be, this highest responsibility. Historically, the presidential candidate has often designated the nominee for vice president. Sometimes the choice has been due to personal predilection or political expediency. But always there is the importance of mutual confidence if they are to work together with maximum effectiveness in the interests of the nation. I recognize these considerations, but I respect beyond measure a convention and a party which has conferred upon me its highest honor without there being asked of me a single commitment except faith in the program and the principles of our party. In these circumstances, I have concluded to depart from the precedents of the past. I have decided that the selection of the vice presidential nominee should be made through the free processes of this convention. So that the Democratic Party's candidate for this office may join me before the nation, not as one man's selection, but as one chosen by our great party, even as I have been chosen.
It's on the floor. Over.
I would add only this. In taking this step, I am expressing my confidence in your choice and in the many fine men whose prominence in our party will command your consideration. The choice will be yours. The profit will be the nations. And now, until tomorrow night, again my heartfelt thanks, and may God be with you.
Standing ovation for the vice presidential nominee, Adlai Stevenson, as he now turns, goes back to the rostrum, waves that familiar wave of his with his right hand. Once again in the air, everybody standing on their feet. Mr. Truman clapping off to the side now from his box. Mr. Stevenson waving in his direction now off to the other side. And he said tonight, he had made no commitments and he wanted the delegates to name their own choice for the vice presidency. Now down to Fulton Lewis on the platform.
Well, the presidential nominee is shaking hands with the various officials of the convention. Sam Rayburn is walking along behind him, and immediately along with Mr. Stevenson is Lyndon Johnson, Senator Lyndon Johnson of Texas, who, of course, is one of the very strong vice presidential possibilities. When he showed up here on the platform together with Mr. Stevenson tonight, there was very considerable speculation that perhaps Mr. Stevenson was going to break precedence the other way and was going to ask the convention to nominate Lyndon Johnson. However, Lyndon Johnson did not take the platform. There are many of us who doubt anyway whether he would be willing to run as vice president, but we will find that out tomorrow. Mr. Stevenson is now on his way down on the arm of Sam Rayburn, and he now is disappearing from the hall, and things from here on will begin to quiet down.
I don't propose in the forthcoming campaign to make political capital out of the president's illness. His ability to personally fulfill the demands of his exacting office is a matter between him and the American people. So far as I am concerned, that is where the matter rests. As we all do, I wish deeply for the president's health and well-being. But if the condition of President Eisenhower is not an issue, as far as I am concerned, the condition and the conduct of the president's office and of the administration he heads is very much an issue. The men who run the Eisenhower administration evidently believe that the minds of Americans can be manipulated by shows and slogans and the arts of advertising. And that conviction will, I dare say, be backed up by the greatest torrent of money ever poured out to influence an American election. Poured out by men who fear nothing so much as change, and who want everything to stay as it is, only more so. Now, this idea that you can merchandise candidates for high office, like breakfast cereal, that you can gather votes like box tops, is, I think, the ultimate indignity to the democratic process. But we Democrats must also face the fact that no president and no administration has ever before enjoyed such an uncritical and enthusiastic support from so much of the press and the organs of comment as this one. Let us, however, ask the people of our country, what great purpose for the Republic has the President's popularity and this unrivaled opportunity for leadership been put? Has the Eisenhower administration used this opportunity to elevate us, to enlighten us, to inspire us? Did it in a time of headlong, worldwide, revolutionary change prepare us for stern decisions and for great risks? Did it, in short, give men and women a glimpse of the nobility and the vision without which peoples and nations perish? Or did it, on the other hand, just reassure us that all is well, that everything is all right, that everyone is prosperous and safe, that no great decisions are required of us, and that even the presidency of the United States has somehow become an easy job? Now I shall have to confess that the Republican administration has performed a minor miracle. After 20 years of incessant damnation of the New Deal, they not only haven't repealed it, but they have swallowed it. Or at least most of it. And it looks as though they might be able to keep it down until at least after election. Now, I suppose we should be thankful that they have caught up with the New Deal at last. But what have they done to take advantage of the great opportunities of these times, a generation after the New Deal? Well, I say they have smothered us in smiles and complacency, while our social and our economic advancement has ground to a halt, and while our leadership and security in the world have been imperiled. In spite of these unparalleled opportunities to lead at home and abroad, they have, I say, been wasting our opportunities and losing our world. I say, my friends, that what this country needs is not propaganda and a personality cult. What this country needs is leadership and truth, and that is what we mean to give it. What is the truth? The truth is that the Republican Party is a house divided. The truth is that President Eisenhower, cynically coveted as a candidate, but ignored as a leader, is largely indebted to Democrats in Congress for what accomplishments he can claim. The truth is that we are not all prosperous. The truth is that the farmer, especially the family farmer who matters most, has not had his fair share of the national income, and the Republicans have done nothing to help him until an election year. The truth is that 30 million Americans live today, 30 million, live today in families trying to make ends meet on less than $2,000 a year. The truth is that the small farmer, the small businessman, the teacher, the white-collar worker, the retired citizen trying to pay today's prices on yesterday's pensions, all these are in serious trouble. The truth is that in this government of big men, big financially, no one speaks for the little man. The truth is not that our policy has the communists on the run. The truth, unhappily, is not, in the Republican president's words, that our prestige since the last war has never been as high as it is this day. The truth is that it has probably never been lower. The truth is that we are losing the military advantage, the economic initiative, and the moral leadership. The truth is not that we are winning the Cold War. The truth is that we are losing the Cold War. Now, don't misunderstand me. I, for one, am ready to acknowledge the sincerity of the Republican president's desire for peace and for happiness for all. But good intentions are not good enough. And the country is... Our country is stalled on dead center. It's stalled in the middle of the road, a place I'm told some Republicans like, while the world goes whirling past us. America, which has lifted man to his highest economic state, which has saved freedom in war and in peace, which has saved collective security, no longer sparks and flames and gives off new ideas and initiatives. Our lights are dim. We chat complacently of this and that, while, in Carlyle's phrase, death and eternity sit glaring. And I could add that opportunity, neglected opportunity, sits glaring too. But you cannot surround the future with arms. You cannot dominate the racing world by standing still. And I say that it is time to get up, to get moving again. It is time for America to be herself again. And that, my friends, is what this election is all about. Here at home, we can make good the lost opportunities. We can recover the wasted years. We can cross the threshold of the new America. What we need is a rebirth of leadership. Leadership that will give us a glimpse of the nobility and vision without which peoples and nations perish. Woodrow Wilson said that when America loses its ardor for mankind, it is time to elect a Democratic president. There doesn't appear to be much ardor for anything in America just now. And it's time to elect a Democratic administration, a Democratic Congress, yes, and Democratic government in every state and local office all across the land. In our hearts, we know that the horizons of this new America are as endless, its promises as staggering in its richness as the unfolding miracle of human knowledge. America renews itself with every forward thrust of the human mind. We live in a second industrial revolution. We live at a time when the powers of the atom are about to be harnessed for ever greater production. We live at a time when even the ancient specter of hunger is vanishing. This is the age of abundance. Never in history has there been such an opportunity to show what we can do to improve the quality of living. Now that the old, the terrible, grinding anxieties of daily bread, shelter, and raiment are disappearing. I say that with leadership, democratic leadership, we can do justice to our children. We can repair the ravages of time and neglect to our schools. We can and we will. I say that with leadership, with democratic leadership, we can restore the vitality of the American family farm. We can preserve the position of small business without injury to the large. We can strengthen labor unions and collective bargaining as vital institutions in a free economy. I say we can, and that our party history proves that we will. With leadership, democratic leadership, we can conserve our resources of land and forest and water. We can develop them for the benefit of all of our citizens. We can, and the record shows that we will. With leadership, we can rekindle the spirit of liberty emblazoned in the Bill of Rights. We can build this new America where the doors of opportunity are open equally to all. The doors of our factories and the doors of our schoolrooms. We can make this a land where opportunity is founded on responsibility and freedom on faith, where nothing can smother the lonely, defiant spirit of the free intelligence. We can, and by our traditions as a party, we will. All these things we can do, and we will. But in the international field, the timing is only partially our own. Here, the unrepentant minute, once missed, may be missed forever. Other forces growing yearly in potency dispute with us the direction of our time. Here, more than anywhere, guidance and illumination are needed in the terrifying century of the hydrogen bomb. Here, more than anywhere, we must move and rapidly to repair the ravages of the past 4 years to America's repute and influence abroad. We must move with speed and confidence to reverse the spread of communism. We must strengthen the political and the economic fabric of our alliance. We must launch new programs to meet the challenge of the vast social revolution that is sweeping the world and that has liberated more than half of all mankind in barely a generation. We must turn the violent forces of change to the side of freedom. We must protect the new nations in the exercise of their full independence. And we must help other peoples out of communist or colonial servitude and along the hard road to freedom. And my friends, we must place our nation where it belongs, in the eyes of the world, at the head of the struggle for peace. For in this nuclear age, peace is no longer a visionary ideal. It has become an absolute, imperative, practical necessity. Humanity's long struggle against war has to be won, and won now. Yes, and I say that it can be won. It is time to listen again to our hearts, to speak again our ideals, to be again our great selves. There is, as we all know, a spiritual hunger in the world today, and it cannot be satisfied by material things alone, by better cars on longer credit terms. Our forebears came here to worship God. We must not let our aspirations so diminish that our worship becomes rather the material achievements of bigness. For a century and a half, the Democratic Party has been the party of respect for people, of reverence for life, of hope for each child's future, of belief that the highest revelation is that God is in every man. Once we were not ashamed in this country to be idealists. Once we were proud to confess that an American is a man who wants peace, who believes in a better future, and who loves his fellow man. I say that we must reclaim these great Christian and humane ideas. We must dare to say again that the American cause is the cause of all mankind. If we are to make honest citizens of our hearts, we must unite them again to the ideals in which they have always believed and give those ideals the courage of our tongues. Standing as we do here tonight, at this great watershed, this great fork of history, may we never be silenced. May we never lose our faith in freedom and in the better destiny of man. And now I bid you goodbye. And I hope that we can meet again in every town and village in America.
A big and warm standing ovation for Adlai Stevenson, the Democratic standard bearer for 1956. At this point, we momentarily remind you that for all convention news, stay tuned to your mutual stations.